name is Jeffrey Colling, the director of the Office of National Lakes Policy, and it's my pleasure to welcome you here to the White House today for this important meeting on our process of developing the National Lakes Mitigation Strategy. Community feedback has really been vital to our strategy development process, and that's why we're here today. So I met with many of you in February, and one of the things I told you is I would reconvene to share where we are in the strategy later in the spring. That's where we're here. Why we're here now, just to talk about where we are in the development, the action steps that we're considering. We're going to present an outline of the strategy, and I want to tell you up front that this is something we've shared with the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS, or PACHA, and we have some members here from the PACHA, but also listening by phone today are other members of the PACHA, so we wanted you to be aware that they're listening in, and when we get to the comment portion, we may expect to hear from them. I should tell you about our process, so we're not unveiling the strategy, and what we're telling you is where we're at, but I think we can all recognize that this will evolve. We can evolve based on what we hear from you today, but also as we continue engaging with the PACHA and as well as our federal partners. And we're working towards developing a set of recommendations that we give to the president as well. So what we hear today is not set in stone, but we wanted to give you an update that really will signal a direction that we're moving in. The other thing I would say is that the strategy is just the beginning in some respects. And we really believe that we're at a turning point in our country's response to fighting the domestic epidemic. And as much energy as all of you have put into helping us develop the strategy, you can't be tired now. We need your ongoing energy, enthusiasm, and support to implement it. And quite frankly, that's probably far more important than anything we've done collectively so far. Because we don't want to do all this work as a community and then not go to the next step and really make a lot of things happen coming out of the strategy. So I want to start with talking about where we've been. So as you know, my office, and many of them are here today, have spent many months traveling the country, listening to Americans and hearing their ideas and recommendations for the strategy. And that's really been critically important. I think all of you or many of you picked up a copy of our community discussions report that we released several weeks ago. That's also available on our website, www.whitehouse.gov/ONAP. And that was really our attempt to show that we listened to you and heard. And what we tried to say is, this is not the list of every idea that was presented. But you know, I personally went to all 14 community discussions we held. We've had a whole series of other meetings. And it's our best effort to say, these are the things we heard over and over. These were the common themes. But we recognize it's not every idea, but it's our effort to sort of synthesize and tell you back a lot of what people were telling us that came up all across the country. So in addition to the 14 meetings we held, we also held an online process, got around 1,000 comments from the public that way. We also used our convening power at the White House to host a series of meetings. So we held a meeting on looking at issues around HIV and youth. We had a meeting on women and HIV. We had a special meeting on housing. And you know, these types of things are continuing, and now we're sort of moving into the implementation phase. So just yesterday, we had a meeting where we brought in the business community to really talk about what are the good ways to develop public-private partnerships as we move forward to really have some success at implementing the strategy. And that's also a key part of what we're doing. Now, when we think about what you should expect from the strategy, and many of you hopefully have heard me say this before, that this will not be a catalog. It's not going to tell you everything that the United States has to do to respond to the domestic AIDS epidemic. What we hope it is a short, concise plan for moving the country forward. It's really predicated on building on what works, and we think that while we do have to sharpen our response, we're doing a lot of things right in this country, so it's going to build on what works. We're hoping I'll identify a small number of strategic, high-payoff action steps that we need to take to achieve the president's goals. Now, the strategy will essentially be a roadmap for policymakers, all of you, our partners, healthcare providers, community advocates, the general public, on the steps we must take to lower HIV incidence, get all people living with HIV into care and improve their health outcomes, and reduce HIV-related health disparities. Now, some of the things that I would say is that we've heard a lot of good ideas, and one of the things that's been challenging is even if you've read the community discussions report, that's a longer document than our strategy will be. And that's not the full universe of all the ideas we've heard. So one of the things that we've been challenged with is to say, how do we make sense of this and organize it, but really pull out what are the big picture things that we need to focus on. And so what I want to give you today is an outline of where we stand. And in each of the president's three goals, again, reducing HIV incidence, increasing access to care, and reducing HIV health disparities, we want to identify what we think of as just a couple of top-line priorities that we think are, like, when we think about reducing incidence, just a couple things. But what we really hope to get from you today is some feedback on what do we need to do to make these big picture goals really meaningful and successful. We're also, though, hoping that you can share your ideas for how do we make sure we, again, have a successful implementation and ensure that that is just as robust as the process we've had to date. Now, I think it's important to start and sort of say, what are we trying to do with this? And we have a vision for the strategy, and we think it's quite simple. And we see that our vision is that the United States will become a place where new HIV infections are rare, and when they do occur, every person, regardless of their age, their gender, their race or ethnicity, their sexual orientation, or their social economic circumstances, will have unfettered access to high-quality, life-extending care free from stigma and discrimination. So everything we say about goals and action steps, hopefully it will get us as a country to this reality in the future. Now, our first goal is lowering HIV incidence. And when it comes to lowering the number of people who become infected with HIV, we've been thinking about what are all the things we need to do. And we have sort of two key things that we think the country needs to focus on. The first is that we really need to refocus our prevention efforts on communities where HIV is concentrated. And to some extent, we've been fighting the wrong kind of epidemic. If you look at sub-Saharan Africa, for example, many countries have what's called the generalized epidemic. So really, if you're an adult in some parts of Africa, your risk is pretty high for pretty much everybody in the population. That's not really the case in the United States. We have a serious epidemic, but it's really concentrated in very specific communities. And this can cut across risk groups, geography, and other factors. And one of the things that we think we need to understand is we really need to focus on those communities that are at highest risk. The second thing that we think we need to do is we really need to target our efforts and really focus on expanding access to combinations of effective, evidence-based approaches. And part of this is we think about where we've been in the past, where we've had these sort of monolithic debates. Do condoms work or don't they? Can we educate people about HIV? Is it effective? Is a pill a magic bullet? And we'd say we need to make sure we develop the best evidence so we know it works and only invest in those things. But we also think we need multiple layers and overlapping tools that work together to more effectively prevent HIV. And that's something that we think is critically important if we're really going to do a better job at lowering HIV incidence in this country. Now, our next big goal is increasing access to care and improving health outcomes. And I would say a couple things at the start that I think we all can recognize that the Affordable Care Act, the health reform law that the president signed earlier this year, is a dramatic step forward. And I believe this will greatly expand access to insurance coverage for people living with HIV. And I think when we think about ensuring access to care for people with HIV, access to insurance coverage is a starting point, right? And so we think that this law will create many opportunities for us, but we also have some challenges. Specifically in the short term, until health reform is fully implemented, we know that these are tight times. So we really need to make sure we don't lose sight of the challenges we face now, because we will get to a better place once health reform is implemented, but we have some short-term needs we need to take care of. But having said all that, when we think about, we're already as a country moving to implement health reform, what are the things we need to focus on as far as improving access to care for people with HIV? We have three goals that we really are trying to focus on. We believe we need to create a seamless system to immediately link people to continuous coordinated quality care right after they learn they're infected with HIV. And so there's several things in here. Right after they learn their HIV status, we want to get people into care. We want them to have continuous coordinated quality care. The next key step we would say is that we need to take deliberate steps to increase the number and diversity of available providers of clinical care and related services for people living with HIV. Now, some of the things we've heard as we've gone across the country is we actually have a great workforce. We have a lot of people that have committed their careers and invested in providing medical care and other services to people with HIV. But that system is fragile right now. It's aging. We don't have enough providers. And so we think we really need to focus on our capacity to continue providing high-quality services into the future. And then the last key goal for access to care, I'd say we need to support people living with HIV with co-occurring health conditions and those who are challenged in meeting their basic needs, such as housing. So again, we recognize that for many Americans, living with HIV isn't their only issue. Many have issues with substance abuse and addiction challenges. They might have mental illness or other co-occurring conditions. And we really need to think about how do we support people with multiple health challenges. But the other thing is that if our goal is to get people into care, keep them into quality care, we also need to recognize that some people are challenged in meeting very fundamental needs. Housing is just one of them. You know, unfortunately, people are challenged in having enough food sometimes in this country, and we need to think about what people need in a more holistic way. The next key goal is reducing HIV-related health disparities and inequities. And we've identified three key steps that we think are critically important. The first is that we need to work to end discrimination, stigma and discrimination against people living with HIV. Now, this is something the president has spoken about. He's very focused on this. But we can also say in our own experience traveling across the country at these community discussions, we were struck by the level of stigma and discrimination that people face even today. And the stories are just heartbreaking. We have great civil rights laws, but yet still people are denied basic care. And sometimes they're denied fundamental services from the people that you think would be know the most, medical providers, you know? And so addressing stigma and discrimination, we think is very important. The next step is that, you know, I started out saying we need to focus our prevention efforts, but what do we think everybody needs? So if we're going to focus on the high-risk communities, we think we need to redouble our efforts to use age-appropriate methods to educate all Americans about HIV. So if you're a high-risk group, a low-risk group, everybody needs to know the basic facts about HIV, and I think we really need to refocus on that. We need to do better with young people, but we also need to do better with older people. You know, and so it's an ongoing challenge. This isn't one thing we get right once. This is one of those things we need to be doing over and over, because there's always new people coming along that don't have the basic information that we think is really important. And the last thing I would say in this area is that we think we need new approaches that will have a community-level impact to reduce HIV infection in disproportionately impacted groups. So, you know, we think we have some really good tools about preventing HIV on an individual level. But, you know, when you look at some of these statistics about in high-risk communities, we need to really have better tools at having a community-level impact. And we think that's an area that we need to focus on. Now, another thing that we've heard over and over from many people is that for this strategy to be successful, we need to really do a better job as a country, but also as a federal government, in increasing coordination with all levels of government and private sector stakeholders, and also achieving a greater level of accountability for producing results. So with our three goals outlined by the president, we've identified a fourth area, and that is just achieving a more coordinated national response to the HIV epidemic. And there's two big goals there that we're really looking at. The first is increasing coordination in HIV programs across the federal government and between federal agencies and state, territorial, local, and tribal governments. So I think as we think about this strategy, we are really going to focus at the federal level on improving coordination. But the other thing that I would say is we think we also need, and our second big goal here, is we need new mechanisms to monitor progress toward achieving national goals and better communicate the status of HIV prevention and care efforts to the American public. Now, I will say one thing that we're still grappling with. In each of the top line areas, reducing incidence, access to care, and such, we will have some metrics to measure our process. We're still grappling with what are the right measures, what's the right targets, but it's really important that we think that we measure our progress in a meaningful way, and that's something that we're going to be focusing on. So these again are just a basic framework for what we're planning to do, but we believe that government at all levels, the private sector, leadership from people with HIV and affected communities, that we really have an opportunity as a country to make great strides in lowering HIV incidence, getting more people into care, and seriously addressing some of the very significant HIV health disparities we have. So going forward, as I said at the beginning, our work doesn't end when we have a strategy. In many ways, it's only the beginning. And we really see this as an ongoing process. I should tell you, we're also developing, in addition to our strategy document, a federal implementation plan. And this is something that will provide very specific action steps. We'll identify responsible agencies that are going to do some of these steps, and a rough timeline to say, this is when we're going to try to achieve these goals. So you can see that we're not just sort of painting a good direction. We're going to try to really outline in a serious way what the federal government sees its responsibility is. But I can't emphasize it enough. This is not a federal strategy, and it will not succeed if everybody sits back and waits for us to do everything. We're going to tell you our part, but we expect a lot from you. We expect a lot from state and local governments and a broad range of community stakeholders. Now, the last thing I would say is that the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS is a key partner of ours. And you know, we've consulted with them already. We've always sort of said we see a fundamentally important role for them to be supporting the implementation of the strategy, but also monitoring it. And so that is something that will you'll see a more pronounced role with them going forward. We have shared an outline of where we are at the moment. As we move forward, again, before we send final recommendations to the president, we will be sharing the full strategy with them and see them as critical partners. And to that end, I know that Dr. David Holtgrave is here from the PACHA, and I believe he is going to just make a couple of brief comments. Thank you, David.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Jeff. It's really an honor to be here to be asked to say just a few words on behalf of PACHA and our wonderful chair, Dr. Helene Gale. I'd like to welcome everyone in attendance today and also to commend Jeff Crowley and the entire ONAP team on moving us ever closer to the development of this critical national AIDS strategy. And I'd also like to make it clear that the PACHA members that are here today and on the phone are here primarily to listen to your views and your reactions, so I'm going to be relatively brief. As Jeff said, PACHA's role to date has been that we've heard the summary of the National AIDS Strategy, as you just did, but we've not yet seen the detailed plan because it's still under construction. Going forward, we look forward to providing further input to the strategy as its development continues and to working diligently on its implementation and evaluation. So while I can't bring you today PACHA's detailed reaction to a detailed plan, I can say that there is a great deal of passion within PACHA on the need for a national AIDS strategy and a sense of real urgency at getting the strategy in place quickly as a guidepost for all of our collective efforts in HIV. It's also fair to say that there's much enthusiasm in PACHA for a future vision that leads us to a place, as Jeff said, where new HIV infections are truly rare, where everyone in need of prevention, treatment, or housing services can access them, and where the HIV epidemic is no longer characterized by stigma and discrimination. This view is also very consistent with the perspective expressed by many across the country in the nationwide community discussion series sponsored by ONAP. Further, there's an emerging sense within PACHA that we must convey to the public the notion that everyone in the U.S. must be informed about HIV, everyone must talk to their families and friends about HIV, and everyone must help to reduce HIV-related stigma and discrimination. And at the same time, our services must be targeted to those communities in most urgent need of them. To fail to concentrate our services in the communities most heavily and disproportionately impacted, gay men of all races and ethnicities, African American and Black communities, including and notably Black women, Latino, Latina communities, communities of persons struggling with substance use, and communities across the South, is to fail to save the most lives possible. And so we must recognize that HIV/AIDS is the responsibility of every American, yet our services must be strategically targeted to have the most impact in the shortest possible time. I also believe it's fair to say that within PACHA, there's a strongly held sense that all living with HIV must have unfettered access to high-quality, client-centered care, including but not limited to HIV treatment. HIV disease becomes more complex with every year as associated comorbidities are recognized, and comprehensive HIV care means comprehensive medical care, period. There's also a strong sense that government at all levels, and most notably the federal government, must do an even better job of coordinating HIV/AIDS efforts and overcoming the effect of siloed funding. For instance, by implementing structural interventions such as housing that span a variety of public health challenges. Further, HIV/AIDS efforts must be transparent, and accountability is critical. We believe and hope that PACHA will have a key role to play in the development and monitoring of core metrics to gauge both the short and long-term success of the National AIDS Strategy. And Lastly, while I have the podium, I hope you'll indulge me on one point that I'd like to make personally, individually. I believe the goals and targets of the National AIDS Strategy absolutely must be achievable, but they also must be very ambitious. I've sworn before Congress that my analyses suggest we can reduce the HIV transmission rate by half in 5 years in the U.S. CDC testified at the same hearing that it would take 10 years, but it could be done. It will also take the right resources, however. These resources could come from new funds, from redirected funds, or from public-private sector partnerships like those announced by ONAP yesterday. But scale-up is necessary. If we allow HIV transmission rate to stay flat in the U.S. by the time President Obama leaves office in 2017, note I said 2017, HIV incidence could easily top 70,000 per year, and prevalence could have grown to more than 1.5 million people living with HIV. This is not the legacy I want for President Obama, and I know it's not the legacy his administration wants. With the right investments, we can substantially reduce the transmission rate, substantially reduce incidence, and slow, though not stop, the growth of HIV prevalence. This is the kind of transformational change many have hoped for. Resources there, whether they're new, redirected, or private sector, won't be easy to come by, but we must provide care for everyone living with HIV, and we must truly redouble our efforts in prevention, because to fail to do so would mean more infection, more death, and actually billions more dollars spent in public sector medical care costs. Thank you for indulging me on that last personal point. I promise not to raise my hand during the comment period. And again, let me bring to you the heartfelt greetings from Dr. Gale, the chair of PACHA, and say that PACHA truly hopes to learn from you today, tomorrow, and in the years ahead. Thank you very much.
Hello, everybody. I'm James Albino. I'm the Senior Program Manager here in the White House in the Office of National AIDS Policy. I want to say hello to the PACHA. They can't see me, but I know they can hear me. And I know they're on the line. They will be on the line listening. We will now take your input, your feedback on the outline that Jeff's provided. We ask for those of you that do want to make statements to please approach the mics on either side of the auditorium and make your statements. A couple of ground rules. We have two mics, so we're going to alternate from one mic to the other. We ask that you line up and make your comments. You will each have 90 seconds to make your comments and provide feedback. I do have a timer, so I will keep it to 90 seconds, and it does have a beep, as Adele pointed out. We are recording this. This is going to be available on the web. It is not being live cast as we speak, but it will be available further. So we ask that everybody that has a comment to make, please line up at the mics now. And we'll start with the mic on the right, on the left-hand side.
I'm Catherine Hansens from the Center for HIV Law and Policy. I'm here on behalf of the center, the ACLU's AIDS Project, and Lambda Legal. I was very happy to hear the recognition of the problem of discrimination, and our ask is that something very concrete and specific be included in both the National AIDS Strategy and the implementation plan to address the very serious problem of HIV criminalization and the problem generally of ignorance and stigma in the criminal justice system. I think we need both carrots and sticks. I think we need financial incentives for states and programs that remove state laws and prosecution policies that base severe punishments on the fact of HIV status. I think we need clarification and guidance from the Department of Justice to make it clear that prosecuting people with HIV in the absence of specific intent to infect someone is inappropriate, contrary to public health.
You have 15 seconds.
You just took two. and also that use of the criminal law and the criminal justice system inside prisons and in the criminal justice prosecution system to single out HIV for special punishment is contrary to federal anti-discrimination law.
Thank you. Someone else?
Hi, good morning. There we go. My name is Andrea Rigoli, and I'm from Pediatric AIDS HIV Care. I wanted to sort of echo the woman's sentiment and say thank you so much for recognizing the weight that stigma has on people living with HIV/AIDS at the moment. I hope that when you start looking about how to address HIV/AIDS stigma, that you'll look at sort of everything that's going on. I know that you're looking for evidence-based interventions, but please keep in mind that addressing stigma hasn't really been too much of a priority in the United States, so there might not be that many evidence-based interventions, but we have to start somewhere. So maybe it might be a good thing to see if we can find some innovative programs that maybe don't have evidence, but we have to get the evidence somewhere. And what was the last thing that I was gonna say? How much time do I have left?
Exactly 30 seconds.
Exactly 30 seconds. I think that's it. I think it's, I remember. Just remember also that when you're addressing stigma, getting good results from addressing stigma can also trickle down into all the other issues that we have with HIV, because a lot of it comes from the fact that it's still a very silent disease. So it's really important that we address stigma so that it can trickle down to all the other issues that we have. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
He's going to talk. My name is Roy. I live with the virus.
Hi, my name is Antonio Davis. I'm from Philadelphia. I'm part of the CPG, and I'm a community leader, and I'm someone living with HIV. There's been numerous new studies showing access for safe and affordable housing, and it is important to have treatment as well as prevention for HIV housing. Thus, the national HIV strategy includes an increasing funding for HOPWA to meet the needs of the state. For example, in Philadelphia, which is a several year waiting list with 200 plus people on the list, on the waiting list, does HOPWA provide, is there an increase in the budget for HOPWA?
Thank you, Antonio. Chris?
good morning, thanks. Very much for that presentation. My name is Chris Collins. I'm with AMFAR. First off, I want to say there's a lot there in what you presented, Jeff, that I think sounds very positive and hopeful, and I think we all look forward to a strategy that's going to have a real impact. So thank you very much for everybody for your work on this. A couple points I just wanted to make. It's great to hear about in prevention, focusing where the epidemic is, and looking at bringing programs to scale. That's absolutely essential. I want to encourage you in the area of coordination and accountability, thinking about it also being state and local actors as being key, that we have measures to really help local and state actors and hold them accountable in terms of making sure their prevention plans match what their local and state epidemics look like, and that they have plans that are designed so that they can bring incidents down in those communities. I think you've also talked about community-level interventions and how key they are. That's absolutely true. I think it's a very important area for the strategy, and I encourage you to think about how the administration can use new funds available for prevention through healthcare reform to do some of those community-level interventions that address the
seconds,
needs.
15 seconds, Chris.
Of the most at-risk populations across a variety of health concerns. Research would love to see more in the strategy about coordination across agencies for a research plan. Our research enterprise really needs to be addressing the three goals that the President has laid out. And I want to echo Dr. Holtgrave that we're really hoping for ambitious targets to drive forward all our efforts as well as our work on the Hill. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Urbino, for keeping the door of communication open. My name is Victor Mooney, traveling from New York, Executive Director of South African Arts International, and Public Affairs Officer for ASA Institute in Brooklyn, New York. There's two short points that I want to share with you. In Brooklyn and throughout the five boroughs in New York City, we're hoping that you can focus on the ADAP, AIDS Drug Assistance Program. That's an important issue that we're all concerned with. Secondly, I'm making my third attempt to row across the Atlantic Ocean from Africa to the Brooklyn Bridge. The goal of this project is to encourage people in our community to get tested for HIV/AIDS. I applaud the president and his team for not giving up in passing the healthcare reform. And just like with this cause, I can't give up. The help that we're asking from you directly, and many of you in the audience, I've sent emails out. We need people to vote. We need 25,000 people to vote for the Pepsi Project. That's the hope that we need. If you guys can go online and vote for us.
15 seconds, Victor.
It will help us out. Gracias por el tiempo. Buena suerte, señora.
Gracias. Can we go to the other mic for a second?
Good morning. My name is Kathy O'Brien. I'm executive director of the Hyacinth AIDS Foundation in New Jersey. Thank you so much for the work that you've done through the year. I think the report is great. One of the things that we would strongly support is in the opportunity of federal and state collaborations is a specific recommendation for state participation in programs such as ADAP, that there be specific requirements for them to support the programs, to put funds into the programs. It's ADAP, it's Medicaid, it's all the federal programs that need state dollars as well.
Thank you. We'll go to this mic now.
Thank you. My name is Tim Boyd. I'm with the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. One of the areas I haven't read or heard a lot about in regards to this strategy is the priority of research, and specifically vaccine research. I just wanted to ask if the strategy will include a review of the current state and near future of research, and will it include an assessment in regards to areas of focus and funding for research? I mean, given the large amount of money that we spend on this area and the budget constraints faced by so many program areas across the federal government, I think cost effectiveness and how we spend our money is a critical issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Go to this mic.
My name is Rosemary Cabrera, and I'm from Community Healthcare Network, New York City, and I'm here to be part of the solution process. So how do you prevent new infections? You do that by increasing the number of media campaigns that occur throughout the year. Currently, only two major media campaigns occur, one during the National Testing Day and the other one through the AIDS Walk, which it's happening next Sunday. We also need to continue to focus in increasing prevention among the youth. I know you guys are focusing on that. And we need to do that by beginning early prevention around the fifth grade. This is crucial because we all know what happens once these kids get to junior high. They begin to experiment, sexually experiment. We also need to continue to focus around HIV testing, and I strongly believe that in order to be successful, this needs to become part of everyone's initial and annual visits. Just like tuberculosis, that they go in and they get a PPD implanted, everyone should be tested for HIV, and it should be mandated. How do we go about maintaining good data? That is crucial. And I feel that if we mandate organizations that accept funding, that they must provide data indicating their efficacy of their efforts. Regarding increasing access to coordinated care, we must expand case management services, because through case management services is where the coordination of care occurs. In addition to the ADAP services, I know that through the United States, there are waiting lists for individuals to be able to be eligible for ADAP, and therefore they cannot receive medical services nor medications to address their HIV status. Finally, increasing the number of HIV providers is crucial. I know that at my agency, for example, we have 10 different health centers in New York City. We are currently looking for 6 HIV providers. We've been doing that for over a year. We cannot find them. And my recommendation is that HIV training should be part of every medical provider, internist, MD, internship, and that the residency must occur via a community center. So by the time they go out into the community, they will be able to relate and understand what our communities are going through. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go to this mic.
My name is Melva Florence. I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina. Have a lot to say, but what I will say is I am an African-American woman. This is the second opportunity I've had to participate in the community discussion on HIV. And as I listen to the National AIDS Strategy, I'm consistently aware of how often black women are mentioned, low-income issues are mentioned, yet we continue to see that we're not able to get access to the information that we need. It took my organization, which is The Last Straw, of which I'm the executive director, 2 years to get a referral through the Department of Health and Human Services because my local health department was unaware. As we work through the community with the resources that we have, which have largely come from this area through the National Minority AIDS Council and the Equal Access Initiative grant, we move out into the communities and we are finding communities who have women who have no idea about the impact of HIV, HIV risks, HIV risk-related behaviors. I had the opportunity this time to bring with me two residents that live less than a mile from my office who had an issue related to housing. It is Keosha G and Starling Nelson. They have a housing issue where we are consistently seeing problems that are preceding the ability to address the prevention that is necessary. This is what's going on in my community. We see a tremendous amount of other problems that prevent these women from being able to deal with prevention related issues as it relates to HIV, and we need that to be a consideration as black women in low income areas and impacted areas are looked at.
Thank you very much, Melba.
Hello. Hello, my name is Jennifer Freeman Smith. I'm with Farm Worker Justice in Washington, D.C. We provide capacity building assistance services to organizations providing HIV prevention services to migrant and seasonal farm workers and other rural Latino communities. And my comments are tied to some of the challenges that we face in our work, which is the lack of surveillance data about what is happening in rural Latino communities, especially among migrant and seasonal farm workers. What studies that do exist are based on tiny population sizes, tiny samples, and they're not recent at all. I think the CDC's most recent surveillance data is from 1993. So it makes it a challenge for us to secure funding and move forward with different projects without an accurate picture. But based on qualitative data, what we do know is that there are very significant risk factors. The majority of farm workers are Latino. The majority of farm workers are men, 70% men. High use of sex workers, MSM activity, stigma, you name it, everything, poverty, all of the things that you can possibly imagine. So it would help us if the national strategy addressed migrant Latino populations.
15 seconds.
Okay. And the other issue, of course, is undocumented immigration status. And so we would hope that efforts would be made to extend services to undocumented immigrants so that they seek the services that they need without fear of repercussions. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you. Lisa Noguchi, and I'm a Washington, D.C. liaison for the Microbicide Trials Network of the McGee Women's Research Institute at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, and also the core liaison for MTN's Community Working Group. I was happy to see research identified as a major cross-cutting theme in the report. I think we all want to implement the best, most effective evidence-based strategies for prevention of transmission. But increased funding for HIV prevention research is going to be key for identifying those evidence-based strategies where they do not yet exist. We need funding to evaluate the safety, acceptability, and effectiveness of topical microbicides, pre-exposure prophylaxis, and vaccines for communities at the highest risk, including African American women and MSM of color. I hope to see many of you at the Microbicides 2010 meeting in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania next week. Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa. Bill, could I ask that you move the mic to the middle? People are leaning against the wall, I'm not sure. Thanks.
Good.
Thanks.
The props have to be right. Morning. My name is Bill Smith. Along with Paul Kawada from NMAC and Laura Hainan from NASDAQ, I'm one of the three co-chairs of the Federal AIDS Policy Partnership. but I'm also the executive director of the National Coalition of STD Directors, or NCSD. NCSD represents the 65 directly funded project areas with the CDC doing STD prevention and control. I wanted to also resonate with something that David said, which was really the focus and the importance of focusing on comorbidities. It's increasingly clear with some of the new data that's out that we are dealing with some very significant syndemics that around STDs and HIV, most particularly syphilis in gay men. I'm appreciative of the White House's efforts so far in recognizing the importance of focusing on comorbidities in the appropriations process and what you've recommended for that, and in support of the CDC's own efforts on program integration. It's going to be tough to do increasing integration around this without some increasing dollars, and we're all aware of the reality of that, but it's sort of absolutely essential at the moment. But what I really want to nail down is it's going to be really difficult for us to get on top of the domestic HIV epidemic if we don't start tackling the STD epidemic, which underlies it. So I just wanted to nail down those few points, and thank you all for keeping in contact with us.
Thanks, Bill.
Good morning. My name is Raymond Blanks, and I'm from the Trinity Development Corporation here in Washington, D.C. There are three things I want to just emphasize quickly. One is, I think that is extremely important that we recognize the urgency of now. We really need to get this thing in place as quickly as possible, given the amount of illness that saturates our country. So we don't have luxury of time. That's a point I think we need to emphasize. You folks may have to work overtime to get the job done. The second part is that I think one of the things that we have to do is that the federal government really has to watch his money. The Washington Post recently focused on the HIV agency in Washington, and it revealed that there were hundreds of thousands of dollars misused. It was then that the federal government said to the district government, we really want to look at your stuff. Well, you know what? You should have done that before the Washington Post revealed how the money was wasted. You really have to follow the money if you're going to get the kinds of services that you want. Finally, I think that it's extremely important that the federal government give some leadership in this particular regard. There are many people concerned, willing to be involved. They just don't know what to do. They don't know what are the best practices. Give us a compendium of best practices that we can take into the community for young people, for old people, for gay people, for black people. You know, we really need to have a roadmap in terms of where we're going. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Raymond. Jen.
Hi. Thank you all so much. I'm Jen Haitel-Yakush, Director of Public Policy at the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the U.S., or CECUS. Thank you for continuing to have these community conversations and allowing the community to continue to weigh in. I know I've said before, but I think it necessary to say again, I very much hope that as a result of what you heard across the country and at the Youth and HIV meeting that you held here, which again, thank you for holding that meeting specifically focused on young people, that comprehensive sexuality education for all school-age children is a core piece of the prevention portion of this strategy. I know you heard it loud and clear at the Youth and HIV meeting and across the country. And I think reaching young people before they're sexually active needs to be a core piece of this so that we are targeting prevention efforts, and I agree that that's an important piece, but we also need to reach all young people and see all young people as a target before they become sexually active, providing them with the information they need. And I hope in terms of the better coordination that one of the agencies that's involved is the Department of Education and that they're being looked at as better coordinating, especially with the CDC. I also, my final point, want to echo a point that Dr. Holtgrave made about the need. We know it's a tight budget year. We know that finances across the country are tight, but if we continue to see the same level of prevention funding that we've seen, even with better coordination, we won't meet the goals that we all have in mind of really reducing this epidemic. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Lance.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm Lance Toma with Asian and Pacific Islander Wellness Center in San Francisco. Thank you so much for sharing where you're at with this strategy and report. I just wanted to make sure, while I appreciate the stigma and discrimination being named many times, that as a structural issue that we have to contend with, another structural issue I want to put on the plate around in decreasing HIV infection is to make sure that data collection and surveillance is addressed, because in many communities, we still don't have the data to even know what the epidemic is in Asian Pacific Islander Native Hawaiian, Alaska Native, even transgender communities. We need to have better and accurate data across the board, across the country. In terms of research, and it's been said before, and I've spoken this at CDC, that there is no research, evidence-based research around prevention interventions for Asian and Pacific Islanders, and that's critical that investment be made in research for communities that that are not being prioritized, so that we can actually have resources on the ground to do that. In terms of access to care, I want to make sure that culturally competent, linguistically accessible models are mentioned, because that's so key for our communities. Systems of care are already unraveling in our communities, and that's going to be a really key component to access. And then just to make sure that we, ongoing, I heard that there's community engagement around implementation of the plan, and I just want to make sure that there's a plan around that so that we can know how to be involved with you. Thanks.
Thank you, Lance.
Good afternoon. My name is Cleo Monago. I'm the CEO of the Amasi Wellness and Cultural Center and the Black Men's Exchange. First of all, thank you for the invitation and having this activity occur. It was mentioned earlier during your presentation the importance of doing community level work. And I really think is important because, for example, there's a lot of people that I work with. I'm a researcher as well, and I work with lots of people, particularly Black men these days. And most of the people most MSMs, who you also mentioned as a particularly high-risk group, in this late stage in time, know how HIV is transmitted. We're not talking about, among MSM in particular, an ignorant group intellectually. But we're talking about a group that's not used to being powerful, is not used to being heard, and not used to having a voice. For example, this disease went from having a white gay face to no face to a Black women's face. It never had a Black men's campaign that was, you know, on a national level that had the bells and whistles of that this is an important group, this is an important part of the American population. So one of the reasons why people are putting themselves at risk has to do with the fact that there's a lot of American cultural norms that imply that Black men's lives aren't valuable. So when people feel unvaluable, sometimes regardless of what they intellectually know, they won't put it into practice because they're questioning their worth, or their worth is being questioned by the environment. So I think it's important that whatever's being laid out as a national plan, that those kind of unique considerations are raised, and it has to be explicitly prepared to be done because it's not normal to actually address these issues.
10 seconds.
And you need people in place who know how to address these issues. I think the most important thing I want to mention was that, the accountability issue is very important too. I think that you guys need to come up with some markers for excellence so people can know what the variables are to have an excellent prevention program. And the last thing, since my time is almost up, there's not enough focus on prevention. You can go to a lot of Black communities and see the very beautiful, glossy covered treatment ads everywhere, at bus stops, everywhere, but you don't see the word prevention hardly anywhere. So it needs to be more balanced. Maybe you guys can have a relationship with the pharmaceuticals to invest in prevention messages.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Fredette West with the Racial and Ethnic Health Disparities Coalition and African American Health Alliance. And first, just want to thank you for all that you've done so far and will continue to do, and in agreement with all that has been said. But we also must make sure that there is a real investment in infrastructure, especially across the hardest hit communities. We continue to say follow the epidemic, but in reality, we're not getting there. We really must make those tough decisions and do that. With regard to evidence base, it has to include researchers of color on that front end, not just on the back end of applying somebody else's evidence base. In doing that, we have to make sure that there's some jump start to increase the diversity within the healthcare providers that are out there, and some incentive for them to work across and within communities of color. How much more time do I have?
20 seconds.
And I'd ask also that you look at the intersection of HIV/AIDS with healthcare reform, with health information technology, and also with regard to all the other programs that are across the HHS. And that there is an involvement of the new social media, and even existing and old social media is out of the reach of so many communities, such that there is not a continued uphill climb from the bottom.
Thank you very much for that.
Is my clock on? Hi.
I'm Evelyn Tomaszewski from the National Association of Social Workers in our Human Rights and International Affairs Division. And I speak today on behalf of the many social workers who don't have the opportunity to travel to Washington, D.C., who may not have the opportunity to be able to speak about their work around HIV, or who may not really understand the connection of their work to HIV. And I think, so I'd like to talk a little bit about the idea of increasing the number of HIV providers in education training and recognizing co-occurring disorders, that I'd like us to open our lens a little wider to look at health and behavioral health care providers. That when we look at co-occurring disorders of substance use, mental illness, that more likely I'm going to access a counselor, a social worker, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, than my physician when I talk about my feelings or what's going on in my life, or my physician may not have time to do that. Research has shown that there is a correlation of risk and use of substance use, mental illness, anxiety, depression, trauma. So what I want to connect is leveraging and utilizing what's available already through the AIDS Education and Training Centers, the Addiction Technology Training Centers, and the mental health provider training programs that currently exist at the National Association of Social Workers, the American Psychological Association, and the American Psychiatric Association, as well as leveraging the associations and professional groups that are here to reach out and educate their members about HIV.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name's Keith Egan. I'm CEO for South Jersey AIDS Alliance. We're an AIDS service organization that provides services in the southeasternmost three counties of New Jersey. Our main offices are in Atlantic City, a city where permanent residents are, one in every 50 permanent resident is infected with HIV. Many of these have been infected through injected drug use, and I am urging this group to include resources or the development of resources for more and better syringe access programs throughout this country as a matter of routine application in prevention of HIV. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Geronimo Augusto. I'm a PhD candidate. I used to work on the prevention side and also in the care and treatment side. At this time, I'm actually just coming as a student at this time. I think I'm just piggybacking on what most people have said here. I think we definitely need to look at what has been working and maximize those efforts, and especially the best practices already out there. But at the same time, while we know there's good things that's been working, we also know there's lots of things that need improvement. So if we look at the different areas, if we look at the prevention aspect, for example, I definitely think we need to refocus more funding towards HIV negative and staying negative rather than just once you're positive, then how to stay so that you don't continue spreading it. So that's one aspect, especially in terms of the prevention. In terms of the access, I definitely think we need to look at reducing the bottlenecks that exist. You know, while we talk about it's important that people get into care right away, we know that there's a lot of delay from the time they're infected until the time they get into care and lets people move away from not getting into care. So ways that we can definitely increase that is definitely through health IT. And through the health IT, we can help improve the evaluation tools that already exist, the quality control measures, et cetera, and including the coordinated efforts that already exist.
15 seconds.
Okay, I think I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
My name is John Barnes. I'm with Funders Concerned About AIDS. And I just wanted to encourage that there be a concerted focus throughout the plan, first in the identification of most impacted groups, that incarcerated populations be considered, and that in terms of increasing coordination among organizations, that departments of correction are involved in terms of ensuring care for people incarcerated and continued care once they're released.
Thanks, John. Let me restart my timer.
I won't be too long.
Go.
Hi, my name is Maeve McCain. I'm from the International Community of Women Living with HIV and AIDS. And I'm just going to make a point that I know that you have heard before about the fact that HIV disproportionately impacts African-American women, particularly from the South. And while PACHA is made up of an incredible group of colleagues and friends and practitioners, and it doesn't include an HIV-positive African-American woman. And as you said, Mr. Crowley, that as it goes forward in the implementation stage, PACHA is going to take on a greater role. I think that a positive African-American woman should be added. I realize that this is outside the rules, but since you created the rules of how PACHA would be formed, you can change the rules and amend them. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Lucy Perez, the CAVE Institute African-American Health Alliance, the National Medical Association, and at greatest risk for HIV disease, now not only in the country, but probably globally. And with that being said, one of the things that I've heard comments about, but I don't see as reflected or as much enthusiasm or the leveraging component that the White House and this administration has in this particular arena, and that's the arena of health IT. We talked about a digital divide. We're looking at a canyon now. And when we talk about HIV disease, we're talking about an even greater canyon. You can't find a public phone anywhere. Just about everybody has a cell phone or something like that. Yet, real access to broadband conductivity, even though it may be available, it is definitely not affordable. And when you're making priorities about your health and your health care, that might not be on the top of the list. So there needs to be, in the strategy and its implementation, a way of leveraging that component, because healthcare, quality healthcare without access to broadband health IT is inferior healthcare. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Michael Neurath. I represent the United Church of Christ here in Washington, D.C. on international policy issues. Certainly want to thank the office for the invitation. We're definitely encouraged by the increased focus on high-risk populations, as well as the acknowledgement of the role that faith communities and faith leaders can play. I think we want to just encourage the office to continue to heighten that and to possibly use its power to convene to bring together faith leaders to discuss best practices in education and prevention on the national and local levels. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Hello, my name is Paul. My name is Paul Angelone. I come from Health HIV here in Washington, D.C. And I just want to commend all the efforts that you guys have done in this project. And I think that community outreach meetings are something that's very, very vital to understanding the HIV epidemic and the specific communities that are involved. And the projects also allow for this, sessions like this also allow for us to understand how far we've come within the HIV epidemic. Because as I understand from when I was younger, my mother made the decision for the first Ryan White decision to tell him to go back to school, to allow him to go back to school. It's amazing how far we've come in the last about 30 years. So thank you very much for all of your hard work.
Thank you, Paul. Sarah.
Hi, James. Hi, my name is Sarah Adelo. I work at Advocates for Youth here in D.C. I wanted to echo some thoughts that Jen had shared earlier about the need for comprehensive sex education, as well as involving the Department of Education in this work, but also wanted to point out the need that we also need to be working on training health teachers so that they're able to provide good comprehensive sex education to students that are in the schools. And I also wanted to make sure that there is mention about services for HIV-positive youth, including housing, but also transition services, so once young people turn 18, they're not just hanging out on their own. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Anna?
I'm Anna Ford with UCHAPS, the Urban Coalition for HIV/AIDS Prevention Services, and I just want to thank you and echo the importance of focusing prevention efforts where HIV is highly concentrated and keeping that focus area or goal in mind as you look to create a section of the strategy that's dedicated to coordination and accountability. I just want to encourage you to include local governments, health departments, and communities in that section and in those efforts. Thanks.
Thank you, Anna.
Hi, I'm Connie Trixler. I'm a nurse at a local adolescent clinic for HIV care. And also I work as a research coordinator for the Adolescent Trials Network, which is a multi-centered national network for HIV/AIDS prevention in adolescents. And there's 15 sites in the United States. As it says in your report that youth now account for 29% of your new infections, I think it's really important as you look at your strategies and you go to implement strategies to reduce HIV infection and optimize care and to reduce disparities that you go to your source. And sometimes going to your source means that you have to go out of your comfort zone and you have to go out of the auditorium and go out into the schools and go out into the areas where these youth congregate and gather and work with them, the affected youth and infected youth, to get some answers on how to build your strategies and how to implement your strategies better. And then just the second thing as I would like for you to consider as you address your strategy is that as youth age out and they hit 21, they do lose a lot of services. And I don't know that many youth that are ready to be on their own providing for their own selves and housing and care and insurance at the age of 21. So there's a huge gap there of insurance coverage and medication and care between like 21 and 24. And I would really hope that as you implement this, that you could look at those gaps too. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie.
I'm Eric Cipriano, I'm a private practitioner. Today I'd really like you to address the issue of primary care and HIV. I think we should be all HIV providers in primary care. But I'm not hearing a real strategy to address private practitioners and people in primary care as it's kind of shrinking and getting smaller and smaller as a specialty. So any opportunities that the national strategy can address, I think it should really be at the gatekeeper level. I know you want access to care, but I'm not hearing much of a strategy at that point. So thank you.
Thank you. We have some folks from the PACHA on the line. Can we, are there any comments or questions from the PACHA? Are they on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Hi, Rosie.
Yes, we're on the line.
Do you have any comments or questions or feedback?
Well, this is Rosie Perez, and I would like to just thank the community for always coming in and making their comments. Sometimes their comments are redundant, but I think that the redundancy is what keeps us on track. It keeps the government on track, and it keeps the PACHA on track. So I want to thank the community for coming in today for that. And don't stop until you see results, because I know that as a member of PACHA, we are not going to stop until we see results as well. And I look forward to fine-tuning the strategy in the later dates as we come together. And I think that one of the most important things for me on the incident committee is to address prevention on a media scale, incorporating the media into stopping the incidence of AIDS and HIV and STDs as well. So that's all I would like to add. And thank you, everyone, for your time.
Thanks, Rosie. Praveen, do you have something to add?
Hi, everyone. My name is Praveen, a member of PACHA. Really, from my heart, thank you for all of your heartfelt comments. I remember when I attended the San Francisco and Oakland community discussions back in the fall, I was brought to tears so many times by feeling that we're really at a really amazing moment in our country's history where the government is actively going out and listening to us, people who are out on the ground and doing this kind of work and hearing people speak their truth. And I would just encourage you all to continue outside of these public forums to to continue finding ways to speak your truth to each other on PACHA, to ONAF, and to other agents, so that the more that we hear personal testimonies, the more we know what the gaps are, what are we doing right, what are we not doing right. The more that this epidemic, we can get personal faces onto this work, the more that people will be connected to the stories out there and to the work going on. So thank you so much again, and please just continue telling your truth to us and to each other, so that everyone knows that HIV is everyone's epidemic, not just a few people's epidemic. And just to there was one person who in today's audience mentioned something about knowing one's worth or not knowing one's worth. And I had mentioned the same thing at the San Francisco discussion, and I just can't reiterate enough how we as a nation need to work together to make everyone in our country feel like they are worth something. And that it will be a very crucial way to fight the epidemic, because if you don't feel like you're worth anything in this life, then no matter how much education you have, no matter what circumstances you're in, it's not going to help much if you feel like at the end of the day your life isn't worth much. So let's make sure that all of our communities of color, LGBTQI communities, and other marginalized communities feel like they're worth something, and that they do want to live a life that's long and fulfilling and free of HIV. And if they do have HIV, that they do the services that will enable long-lasting lives. So thank you all. Really, all of you should give yourselves a big round of applause for coming out today and speaking your truth. So thanks again.
Thank you, Praveen. For those that don't know Praveen, he's a member of the PACHA. He attended one of our youth meetings and obviously is very capable. Praveen is actually in India right now. What time is it in where you are, Praveen?
It's 9:45 p.m.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. My name is Yvonne Bennett Barnes. I'm with the Office of Minority Health Resource Center. I am also a tribal member from the Comanche Nation. I want you to remember that it's important to be inclusive of the tribes and our tribal leaders into the plan that you're having. We're on the same level as state. We're not race-based with you. We are a government politically based relationship. The second point is, because I do work with the agency, one agency can't be responsible for all American Indian, Alaska Natives, and Native Hawaiians. It's too much, too little staff, and not enough resources. So even in my own work, in my own collaboration with everybody, I don't have enough resources. I have no funding and no budget. I have to write for the little funds that I do have. So even if we have to go to private or wherever we're trying to get money, there's definitely a disparity there. The last point is that urban natives, 70% of us live off of the reservation, like me and all of us in DC, and I'm sure you guys have heard about that all week. So please be inclusive of us. We do come together at certain points, and we do have meetings and things like that, so it's good to keep in touch with the urban population as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yvonne.
Hi, I'm Sue Perez with Treatment Action Group based here in Washington, D.C. I was sort of struggling because I wasn't really quite sure how to sort of provide my comment because it seems a little touchy. As an Asian American woman living in the United States, you know, I face a lot of stigma and discrimination, and I just feel a lot of the times the people that are discriminated against and stigmatized are expected to really try and figure out how to get out of that situation. So I really hope that the strategy actually looks broader, and it seems like it's a really difficult question because it involves race, class, a lot of American sort of societal conditioning that we have in this country, and I just want to make sure that the effort around ending stigma and discrimination also addresses the people that are actually inflicting the stigma and discrimination. A lot of times they don't know they're doing it, but they are, and not really just focusing on the groups themselves that are being stigmatized and discriminated. So I just hope that we look at it in a much broader way than just, you know, HIV. Because I think that it could be a way to get out of some of the really horrible things that a lot of us face in this work and just generally in our lives. So,
thank you, Sue. Any other comments?
James, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Could I say something, please? This is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. This is Kathy Hires on the Patcha. First, I wanted to thank Jeff and James and the whole staff of ONAP. They really have shown a level of commitment that's amazing, and I think if you read that beautiful vision statement that they came up with, that gives me hope, and I think it's very encouraging. What I would like to suggest is, in addition to the highly impacted groups that we're including, such as minorities, MSM, you know, and so many of the groups that are affected by this disease, that we also make sure we include impacted geographic areas, because there are a lot of hot spots, including the south, the northeast part of the United States, Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and Puerto Rico. Let's not forget Puerto Rico. So I do encourage you to make sure that as we target these scarce resources, that we do try to send the money and the efforts where the next infections are going to be. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before I go to you, can I? Is there anybody else on the PACHA that wants to make a comment? Hearing none. Yes, ma'am.
Cornelius Baker. I'll just join in with Rosie and the others in thanking everyone for being there. And just again, as Jeff has said, this is the beginning and not the end, and we have a lot of work to do.
Thank you, Cornelius.
Fredette West again, Racial and Ethnic Health Disparities Coalition and African American Health Alliance. Just two quick ones. There was mention of a real timeline as it relates to the federal government, but they also going to have to be real timelines as it relates to communities in terms of implementation, as well as a timeline for business and industry, and looking at when those should intersect. And also making sure that, first of all, that there's no waiting list for treatment. It's like we can't have a national strategy on one hand and a waiting list for treatment and care on the other. Thanks.
Thank you for that. Having no other comments, I turn it back over to Jeff. Thank you very much, everybody.
So with this, we will conclude this meeting. I would just want to say a couple of things, and I should have said this at the beginning. President Obama cares deeply about people with HIV and AIDS, and I think he's given us a real opportunity as a country to move forward. And every step of the way, we've just been really grateful for all the assistance we've gotten from so many people. Again, this is a national strategy. It's not our strategy. It's not a federal strategy. But we believe that we are on a good path, and we're getting excited to move into the next phase. You may know this, but in about half an hour, we're doing a call with other members of the public that couldn't be here in person today. So we'll hear from more people. But again, I just want to reiterate that we're really hoping that this is a beginning, and that as we roll out a strategy over the coming weeks, we can really have a robust process for making progress together. But again, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your commitment to this issue.